my message is always characterized by three distinct pieces of information. Number one is I tell you the company name. I've got a contract with this company. I'm not worried about you going and applying to that job online because my agreement will protect me for that. I want you to do your research. It always drove me nuts as a candidate when someone would say, I have a job with a company and this company is paying top dollar. Do you want to talk to us? Like, I don't know the company. I don't know the money. I don't know anything.
Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Whitby, and today I'm thrilled to be joined by Jordana Matsos.
I would see these job descriptions posted and they were so boring and you would read through and just say, so what, so what, so what? And you would never, as a salesperson, I want to know how much money I'm going to make. That's what motivates me. How much do I have the potential to make? And I would see all these listings that didn't state that. So for me, I thought, what if I come online, I give you a little bit about the company, I'm very transparent about the compensation that you could make, and I give you a baseline of skill set, and let's just see how that goes. And it got to be really fun.
Jordana is the managing director of Higher Equity, a sales recruitment agency based in Toronto. She founded the business in 2021 and focuses on helping high-performing sales professionals find their next opportunity.
I propositioned the owner to make me a partner or give me some equity, and I would help to get them up and running and into different markets, and he declined. And so that led me in April of 2021 to say, I'm going to go and try this on my own.
Prior to launching her business, Jordana spent 15 years in corporate sales, leading teams across both startups as well as large enterprises.
I actually took the plunge and went on 100% commission. I went from making about $300,000 a year, you know, with my salary and commissions with a company to March of 2020, right before the pandemic hit, joining a contingency-based generalist recruitment agency. Everything fell apart.
Building on her experience in both hiring and sales, Jordana recently launched Higher Equity Academy, which is a platform designed to give job seekers practical behind-the-scenes insights into how recruiters and hiring managers really operate. So she gives them step-by-step tools and content to help candidates market themselves more effectively and stand out in a crowded job market. Interested to learn more about that shortly. Jordana, welcome. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, Mark. So grateful to be here.
And it's nice to hear another Canadian accent for a change. I don't know if you know this. I'm from Halifax, and my brother actually lives in Toronto.
I did know that, and it must have been the way I said here.
I don't know which word it was, but you definitely sound Canadian. So, no, it's nice. I feel at home already.
And oh, good.
By the way, if you're not already following Jordana on LinkedIn, then definitely worth following, because that's actually how I met Jordana, was through her LinkedIn content, which really stands out. She's doing such a great job with that, and I'm sure we'll come on to talking about that. But that's, I think, we started supporting each other's content, and then that led us to where we are here. So awesome. I'd love to start just by, because you're relatively, I mean, I almost say new. You've been doing this for 4 or 5 years, but you've obviously very experienced in sales and leadership, but relatively new to the recruiting business. And you jumped in without having prior recruitment agency experience, although I understand you were a hiring manager, so you had recruiting experience. How did you end up deciding to start a sales recruitment agency?
Absolutely. I'm happy to answer that. Before I answer that, I do want to say, us connecting on LinkedIn and following each other, you and your content and your podcast were a go-to for me to be able to get up to speed with the recruitment industry. So through the guests that you've had and the content that you were sharing, I was able to understand tech stack, tools, tips, how much revenue I should be getting. So thank you very much for that. As a newer recruiter, that really helped me. I appreciate
it. Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much. I love hearing that. That's, that's music to my ears. So thanks.
Yeah, no problem. My story really starts with me taking human resources at McMaster University in Hamilton. I was not one of those people who knew what I wanted to do or who I wanted to be. And to me, that seemed like a well-rounded education. I learned a little bit about economics, training, organizational behavior, and of course, recruitment and selection. But when I got out into the workforce, I got a job with a unionized steel company as an HR assistant. And within 6 months, decided that wasn't where I wanted to be. Very different, as I'm sure your listeners will know, that are recruiters within a unionized environment. And so I pivoted to sales. For 20 years, I worked at a variety of different organizations, startups, global orgs, national orgs. I also worked within industrial sectors, manufacturing, tech. And that's where I learned how to sell. And it's where I also learned how to hire, how to coach, how to mentor. But on the flip side, it's where I learned how to work with recruiters, not only my internal recruitment teams, but also my agency recruiters. And it's funny because people always say that when you work in an organization in a sales department, you should be best friends with marketing or you should be best friends with finance because those are who are going to help you to get your deal across the line. I was best friends with HR because that's who was going to help me to hire. And so I always stayed very close to them and close to hiring philosophy and hiring processes. And that led me to probably some point between 2017 and 2019, where I really decided to take a different step in my career. And that was because the grind of sales, as anybody who has been in it will know, that 1 month you can be fantastic. You're on top of things and you're getting all of the awards and kudos and, you know, everybody's patting your back, and then some deals fall through and the next month you're on a performance improvement plan and you have a risk of even being employed with that company. So that's a little bit about my background in recruiting. I'm happy to talk to you about how I pivoted and made that hard left turn into it.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd love to hear that, like, because it's not obvious, right? You've got a successful career in sales, and then you decide, hey, I actually, well, I don't want to put words in your mouth. What's the thought process?
In roughly 2018, I went to work for Shutterstock. I don't mind naming the company whatsoever, the global media company, very well respected. And I was hired on as a director of sales. And part of my responsibility was to merge one of the newer companies that they had acquired called Flashstock, alongside with taking the sales force and cutting it down. We had very hefty goals. And what I found out in my first 3 months of being there was the goal was to really hack the sales force down. And we had some great sales talent, some people that had recently been hired. But the mandate was take it from 55 people down to 25 people. But with those 25 people, still attain your $60 million revenue goal. And I found out through that process, Mark, that I really didn't have much of a say as a director of sales. It was the leaders who were guiding me on what to do. And it was me who was injected as, you know, this individual to just carry out the tasks. And I was letting go of some really great people in the organization, only to be told to hire again. And I wasn't understanding that. So that experience, along with a few other experiences in corporate where I would work with external recruiters, and their mandate was, let's get someone in as quickly as possible without really getting to know the culture or understanding what the hiring manager needs or what the candidate needs. And so for me, I also had been placed by some recruiters and hadn't done my homework. I didn't understand the culture enough, and I really listened to what that recruiter was telling me about that place. And I don't want to say I didn't take responsibility for it, but I almost got pushed into an organization to find out that it wasn't the right fit. So there were recruiters and HR people that I started to learn were not acting in the best interest of the company and the candidate. And I thought, I maybe can do this differently. And so that's what I tried to do.
Love that. So absolutely, that all lines up. So April 2021, you took the plunge. And talk to me about your first year in making a living in recruitment.
Yeah, I actually took the plunge and went on 100% commission. I went from making about $300,000 a year, you know, with my salary and commissions with a company, to March of 2020, right before the pandemic hit, joining a contingency-based generalist recruitment agency.
Okay.
And everything fell apart. And so I had an opportunity to take stock and really start to learn a little bit about what it meant to be a recruiter. I listened to LinkedIn learnings. I was listening to podcasts. The gentleman who owned that agency was teaching me, but he had a philosophy that was sunk in from day one, which was, we find people for jobs, not jobs for people. And that just was a visceral reaction with me. And that to me meant don't spend time talking to people, spend time with your client and find them the right people. And it never sat well. So after about a year of working there, I billed about $250,000 working for them. And he had a split. So it was a 60-40 split or a 70-30 split. And I know, you know, these splits are common. So what that meant is if I brought in the company to do business with and I also sourced the candidate, I was able to make 70% and I gave the house 30%. If the house gave me the account and I sourced the candidate and placed the candidate, I was able to make 40%, 60%. So I started to learn that maybe I was able to do this a little bit better on my own. And I really understood the value of marketing. And I propositioned the owner to make me a partner or give me some equity, and I would help to get them up and running and into different markets because I had so much experience to draw on and a network of people who I could recruit for. And he declined. And so that led me in April of 2021 to say, I'm going to go and try this on my own. And I'm happy to tell you what those first few months look like too.
Yeah, please. So I guess his loss, which in retrospect was a good thing, right? And this is what it's hard to recognize it in the moment when you have, you know, things don't go how you are hoping that they're going to go. And then looking back, it turns out to be such a blessing in disguise. So tell me about Higher Equity and getting that up and running.
Of course. In Canada, I decided not to be self-employed with the agency. I decided to formalize my arrangement with my agency. And so I did that. So there were some startup costs. I had to figure out my tech stack. And I decided that I wanted to use the Google suite of services, not Microsoft. I decided on a CRM ATS called JobAdder. And I obviously decided that LinkedIn Recruiter was something that I needed and I needed to pay for. But I knew right away that I needed marketing help. And one of the things that I started to do early on was I started to do video job descriptions. So instead of posting that I'm hiring for an account executive, I would sit in a room and I would say, hey, I'm working for this great new tech company. They're in healthcare. They're going to revolutionize this and that. And they're looking for an account executive. And I would have a lot of energy and I would be transparent about comp. I would always say they're paying $80,000 on a base salary. Your on-target earnings will be $120,000. It'll be uncapped. And I would get flooded with candidates and qualified candidates for doing that. And I picked up the phone and reached out to my network and I said, I'm on my own now. And I had a low percentage when I first started out, Mark. I don't think I was confident in myself. So I started out with 15% because I thought, you know, maybe that's going to attract business. And it did. So in my first year, my margins were quite high. They were about my gross margins were about 60 to 65%. And my billings in year one, just on my own with no contractors, were just under $300,000 in billings.
That's a great first year.
Yeah,
that's a great first year. And I agree. I think 15% is too low, but that was probably a confidence issue and thinking, well, I just need to get myself established. The challenge that people run into when they enter the market at a lower fee is it's then harder to get it back up, right? Because especially with existing clients, because they're like, oh, how come, like, you're doing a good job and it's only 15%. How come, why would we pay more, right? So we can circle back and talk about that. But something you just said that grabbed my, so I remember I've been seeing your videos for years and you did it way before. Now it's more common to see videos on LinkedIn. But you've been doing it since the beginning. So why did you do that? How did you do that? And what was the impact?
Of course, I think it's important for your listeners to know, I am not an individual who loves being on camera. I'm very shy. I'm an introvert at my core. I'm very good with small groups. I'm not very good with big parties or being on stage. And so that to me was really taking myself out of my comfort zone. And the reason why I did it was because I noticed that the content that I was consuming, whether it was recruitment or not, was video, was short form video content, 30 seconds long. And I was consuming educational content that way, as well as entertainment. And I would see these job descriptions posted and they were so boring. And you would read through and just say, so what, so what, so what? And you would never, as a salesperson, I want to know how much money I'm going to make. That's what motivates me. How much do I have the potential to make? And I would see all these listings that didn't state that. So for me, I thought, what if I come online, I give you a little bit about the company, I'm very transparent about the compensation that you could make, and I give you a baseline of skill set, and let's just see how that goes. And it got to be really fun. And I got messages from people saying, we're looking forward to seeing the next job posting. And so that just catapulted into doing more long form video content. And really, humor has been one of the things that has saved my life in this job. And I'm happy to tell you a little bit about how that's helped me in my reach out messages to candidates as well.
I'd love to. Let's circle back to that. So the video, I'm really glad you shared that it was outside your comfort zone, because that does not come across on camera. And so people will assume, oh, she just is really good at, you know, performing for the camera. I think the majority of people feel like that. They don't, like, as soon as you look into a camera, then your brain kind of freezes, or you get all stiff, or you just don't like, it's uncomfortable, right? And I feel the same way, by the way. So knowing that in spite of that, you pushed through because you could see the value from a marketing perspective, and it obviously was successful. I think what video does, it makes you seem almost famous, right? Because people keep seeing, which is hilarious. Like when, in fact, I remember my kids, when they don't think this anymore, but when they were little and they'd see videos of me, they go, Dad, are you famous? I'm like, no, not really. Only to a very small number of people.
Dad's on TV.
Exactly. But it does make you much more visible, and people see you, they can hear your voice, they see, get a sense of your personality, your humor, and everything else. And I really think it has a massive impact in terms of building your brand. I've seen videos of yours, though, that weren't job ads. They were like more about your values, more about, and I saw some humorous ones where you were like acting out situations with like hiring managers and stuff like that. How did the video like marketing evolve?
Tracking impressions and statistics. I wasn't doing that at first. So at first I would just put it out there and I was just doing the type of content that I wanted to do. And then LinkedIn, obviously, when you're looking at the statistics, you can see impressions and you can see engagement. But there's third-party tools that you can use to really expand on that. And so on average, those early videos were getting anywhere from a low end of 3,000 to 5,000 impressions, upwards of 10 to 25,000 impressions.
That's fantastic.
And so I took that and said, how can I, you know, create content that is more educational and more informative? Because again, and you know, in recruitment, we have different audiences. You have candidates that are looking for work. You have passive candidates. You have companies. You have HR managers. I had sales leaders. So there was all of this content that I could put together. And so I really wanted people to get to know me. And I started to read through the messages that I was getting on LinkedIn. And a lot of those messages were saying, you're saying what I'm thinking, or thank you for being so blunt, or this helped me to get a job. And how it's morphed into today, I am someone who will give away as much information as I possibly can, under the premise that once you see the value in working with me and what I'm doing, then you will pay. And so I know that you do that as well, Mark, even through your podcast. And there's a lot of people who I think want to guard information because they're afraid that if someone else has it, then, you know, it's more competition.
Exactly. I'm on board with you 100% there that, you know, it's, first of all, it's like giving value, which induces the law of reciprocity, right? Because people feel like, well, Jordana was the one who taught me this or that that helped me in my career or what have you, then if they're choosing a recruiter, who are they going to go to, right? They're going to go to the person who's already helped them. So Totally agree. So you're paying attention to the metrics. By the way, you mentioned third-party tools. What do you use for your LinkedIn stats?
Taplio. I love Taplio. Taplio can also, because LinkedIn market was probably about, a year and a half ago that you started to be able to schedule your content on LinkedIn. Because before that, you would just, I would go on, it would be like 6 o'clock in the morning. Because that's the other thing. You're trying to gamify, when should I be posting my videos? And there, all of a sudden, there was this rule that, you know, started to pop up online that was like, post your videos around, you know, I'm in Eastern Standard Time Zone. And it was like, post your videos somewhere between the hours of 10 a.m. and 11 a.m. And I thought, who said that? Why do I have to do it that way? And my audience, when I wanted to post something that was geared towards sales leaders, they're not looking at LinkedIn at 10 a.m. They're looking at LinkedIn at 6 a.m. Right. Or perhaps even at 8 p.m. So I started to play along with the times. Taplio, not only was I able to take a look more in depth at my statistics and how they were performing, but I was also able to schedule my content. It has an AI tool that would help me to enhance my content as well. And it also was allowing me to do more than the connection request that I was allowed to do on LinkedIn. So it was kind of bypassing that. And it was serving up other people that I would never have seen. People in the UK, people in Ireland, people in Brazil. I loved it. It was a great tool for me. And it was a small investment. It was about $60 US a month.
Okay, fantastic. Great. I love hearing about new tools, and so does our audience. So appreciate you sharing that. So we kind of did a tangent about video, but I want to just come back to, so you did your first year, 300K from a standing start in an industry that you've only got a year's experience with is a great start. What were some of the challenges or obstacles that you encountered, you know, in that first 12 months?
In the first 12 months, I knew that if I wanted to scale and grow, which ironically I don't now, and I'll explain that, but I knew if I wanted to scale and grow, I would need to hire. And so I hired a third-party marketing agency and was probably paying them anywhere from $2,500 a month to about $3,500 a month. And at the time, they were helping me with my content and helping me with SEO and different types of online analytics. But I decided I needed to hire a sourcer, and I needed to hire a full desk recruiter. And I grew way too fast, Mark. So in 2022, I brought on a full-time recruiter. I brought on a full-time business development person. And then I brought on a sourcer. And my thought behind that was, well, the more people, the merrier, the more I'm growing my company, the more revenue that I'll be bringing in. And for the first few months, it wasn't too bad. But what I really struggled with was fully remote. My BD person was in another province. My recruiter, although local, you know, we only saw each other about once a week. And even though I had spent the time, everything I do is templatized. So, and I you know, it's one of the smartest things that I did. So my outreach messages, my follow-up with clients, how I onboard a client, the intake that we do. So really anybody could come into this business and take over for me. But I will tell you, we grew to about a $700,000 agency in that year. But Mark, my expenses catapulted. I was doing stupid things. I was spending money on conferences and trade shows to try and get the name Higher Equity out there. I spent about $20,000 on an HR conference and went to it. And, you know, I only yielded one client out of it, which you can argue at our billing rates, you know, you broke even on that. But my margins went down to about 20%. My expenses skyrocketed. And 2023 was the big learning year for me for the first 6 months.
Wow. So thanks for sharing that. And it's so true. Like, one of my mentors is a guy called Romney Ross. And now, I don't think he made up this expression, but this was, 10 years ago or so when I was working closely with him. He was like, Mark, revenue is vanity, profit is sanity, cash is reality. You know, it's all very well increasing your, you know, top line, but if your profit goes down, then is that the right, like, strategy? So what did you learn from all that experience, and what did you do differently from that point onward?
So the big learning lesson for me there was that we weren't taking care of our clients in the way that I was in my first year, in the way that we were intimately getting to know them and their brand and their culture. We were cutting corners because we started to take on so many roles. And as you know, in contingent-based recruiting, you know, there's a certain percentage of your roles that you're taking on that you might not fill. You know, either you take too long to fill them, they have internal efforts and they end up filling there or through their own network, or they've hired multiple recruiters, which is always my favorite, right? yes. And so I got right back to my roots. Unfortunately, I did have to let the two individuals go. I kept my marketing agency partners, who I still have today, Henry and Dylan. And I had to tell some customers that we weren't going to do business with them any longer. And a lot of those customers were the ones that we had at 15%, to your point, that weren't willing to come up to the 18 to 22% that I wanted to be able to charge. And so that took another 6 months to dig out. 2023 is a year of mistakes. But, you know, I have a personal motto, and that personal motto is you always have a choice. And sometimes that choice isn't enviable, and it wasn't. But I had to cut back on costs. I cut back on my office, and I cut back on you know, my team. But 2024 was a much better year because of those lessons.
Amazing. So then bring us up to speed with the present day then. How's the business doing, and what new things have you implemented?
Of course. So present day, we're on track this year. I'm on track this year to build about half a million myself.
Awesome.
I do have contractors that I reach out to. So I have partners that have different specializations as well, because as you can imagine, when you're in a sales niche, your clients get to know you. They really like the work that they do for you and say, hey, by the way, can you do VP of operations or can you do IT director? My answer is always, I can, you don't want me to. And I don't really want to. It's not the language that I speak. So I have a bunch of different partners that I will refer to. Normally, it's a 15% referral that I take, and then they run with the rest of that. But the other thing that I did, Mark, that was really valuable is I started to, and right now our gross margins are back up to around 62%. And my costs, like right now, my tech stack, I would say I have Otter that I use, otter.ai. I do pay for ChatGPT. I also use, Google Gemini. There's a new tool that I just started using, which is phenomenal. It's called cliff.ai. And it is specifically designed for role playing. And it is not only an enhancement to sales teams that I'm hiring for to help to get them up to speed and get their confidence, but I actually use it as a recruiter because sometimes I'll go into calls that make me nervous and I'll do a role play for that. So I've got about five contractors.
Idea.
Yeah. You know what? I'm happy to share it as well. It's a number that you dial and there's someone named Cliff that picks up and you give some information. So I could say, hey, I'm going to be speaking with Mark Whitby today on his podcast and, you know, can we run through a role play? And it will start to intuitively ask me some questions. So it really helps with your clients to handle some objections that might come up, especially when it comes to pricing and niche. So I'm in a much better spot today and utilizing all of the partners. But really, the area that I want to scale rather than the recruitment agency is the academy. And I know that might sound odd.
Well, it doesn't sound odd to me because I'm also a content and course creator. And so I understand why you might want to do that. But explain for the audience, like, why you started the academy and how it actually works.
Of course. Roughly 2 years ago, I started to consistently get the same questions from candidates. Why can't I find a job? Why is it taking me so long to get through the interview process? Why is no one calling me about my resume? Why am I submitting 100 different resumes and not hearing back? And then I was also hearing from candidates that I was screening for roles, and they were saying things like, I've gotten into 3 different jobs that were mistakes. I keep making mistakes. What's going on? And so I am not a licensed therapist. And as a recruiter, you sometimes dip your toe in that water when you're working with your clients and your candidates. I started to offer coaching sessions, and I use that word carefully because I am not a certified coach. then those coaching sessions would be 45 minutes to an hour of my time where I would review your resume for you. I would review your LinkedIn profile for you. And it was supplementary income to recruitment rather than me giving away my time for free. I did start to track the time that I was spending, and it was roughly 10 hours a week of free advice that I was giving out, and it just wasn't sustainable. So I would charge about $250 for an hour of my time, and that person would leave with some tangible outcomes. And I just decided, wait a minute, if these dozens of people have these questions, do people really understand how recruiters work? So I would get phone calls from people that would say, can you find me a job? Can you help me? Like, can I pay you? Can you find me a job? No, you can't pay me to find a job. But they didn't know. A lot of people do not understand how recruiters get compensated and how it works. And a lot of recruiters don't really want to share that information. So to me, there was this gate-kept information about how HR works, how recruitment works, what exactly we're looking for. And I thought, what, everybody should know this. Why shouldn't they know it? So that was the evolution for the Academy.
So to me, this is a genius idea, Jordana, and because there's kind of a couple of aspects to it. One is it's a potential additional revenue stream, and we can talk about that. Not an easy one to make to monetize, but the other aspect is it actually allows you to help the candidates who you can't place, right? Which is the majority of them, right? Because if you think of how many hundreds of candidates reach out to you per year or you interact with versus how many of them you actually are going to place in a job, the vast majority you're not going to place. So therefore, and this is always, I think for a lot of us in the recruiting industry, we don't like that, right? Because either it feels a bit mercenary, like I'm not interested in you because I can't make money from you, right? And but at the same time, you just have to guard your time because otherwise you're not going to be productive. So this allows you to be of service and to add value to the majority of candidates who you can't place. So I love that aspect. The reason I think most recruiters don't do it is because, as I'm sure you can attest, putting something like this together actually is a lot of work. So, you know, I'm impressed that you've seen that through and actually launched this academy. How's it going so far?
It's going well in terms of we have broke even on costs. And Mark, before I answer that question, I'll tell you, it took me approximately 3 months of concerted effort. So the basis of the course is set up into three different modules and 30 videos. And it's how recruiters find you, vet you, and hire you. And so within each course, there's approximately 10 videos, and the videos range in length. Some are only 2-3 minutes long. Others are 10 to 15 minutes long. And I walk you through the difference between agency recruiters and corporate recruiters. I walk you through the different pitches that you should have to recruiters. And again, this is all through the lens of sales talent wanting to get hired. There certainly is generalist information about how the recruitment industry works. But a lot of people would say, how did you find me? And I'd be like, how did I find you? Well, LinkedIn recruiter. Do you know how that works? This is how important your keywords are. This is how important your headline is. This is how important your picture is. And candidates just didn't understand that. And the vetting process is really for those candidates that we see where when we post a role on LinkedIn and you get 500 applicants in 24 hours and 98% of them are not qualified, this is trying to say, please don't waste your time, but do this activity instead. Not only does it take you through all of those, but then it also helps you by giving you interview questions that are commonly asked for sales and the answers they're looking for, which other people are not doing. And that's not meant to say I'm spoon feeding you what to do. That's preparation. You can find that information through an AI tool online now. So why are we not openly sharing that? And whether this candidate finds a role through me or not, they are a better qualified candidate. That should make every recruiter happy and every hiring manager happy. So today, the way that we are marketing it is whenever someone will reach out to me and say, hey, can you help me find a job? If they're not within my wheelhouse, I will refer them to someone who can. If they are, I give them three options. I will do a 10 to 15 minute screening call with them just to see what they're looking for. And then I might talk to them about the academy. If they are someone who's already qualified, I will push them over to the academy. Or if they are an individual who I feel would prefer the one-on-one coaching time, I will push them into that. So you're absolutely right, Mark. It's given us right now, it's only a few thousand dollars of extra income a month, which isn't the same as the billings that we would be getting. But for me, it's more the passion behind it. My goal and my mission is I want every single person to know how to interview. There's no reason that you should not know how to interview. And I just think that this information should not be guarded. It should be open.
That is brilliant. And I'm excited for you. Keep me posted on how that evolves and scales. But it must be a passion project, because if you weigh how many hours and hours of time you've put into it versus the monetary ROI, then, you know, it could be argued you would have made more money just spending that same amount of time on your core recruitment business. So, but, you know, I completely get why you want to do that. And then hopefully it does grow. And, you know, if you could 10x that number, that, you know, get instead of 2 and 3,000, you get 20 to 30,000 a month. Now you're talking. The thing that I love about online courses is you're getting paid while you sleep, right? Potentially, you're doing your core business over here, so it's not passive. When people say passive income, it's a bit of a trick, because there's no real income stream that is completely passive, right? They all require work, but what it does do is it uncouples time v money. So you're not getting paid, you're not exchanging like time for like dollars for hours, right? So I think that there is leverage potential. So it's not passive, but it is a leveraged income stream potentially. What are your thoughts on it?
There's more automation that I could bring into it that would bring me more revenue. And that's kind of stage two. So stage one was test the concept. I used to be someone, Mark, who I would fully vet something out and I would wait until I was 90% of the way there and then say, okay, let's try it. And when I started recruiting back in 2021, I got a very good piece of advice from a former VP of sales who said, if you're 51% sure, go. And so I was 51% sure about recruiting. I went. And with this academy, I had enough feedback from candidates that I was 51% sure that this would be valuable in the market. And I'm even getting feedback from the candidates who are going through it. And they're telling me things like, you know, Jordana, I would love it if you would jump on LinkedIn once a week and do a LinkedIn Live and just answer a bunch of recruitment questions. Because sometimes, Mark, people just call and they say, can you review an offer for me? And I'm like, I'm not a lawyer, but if you take the course, there's an hour where I walk you through one of my offers and the clauses to watch out for and the different things that are stated in an offer, which you should negotiate. But that was exactly why I did it, was not only to serve a certain community that I couldn't help, to teach people about the industry, but to have another revenue stream for when recruitment, as we've seen in the last few years, has its ups and downs. But you're right. I could easily make $30,000 off of a billing that would take me a month versus $2,000 or $3,000 off of helping, you know, 10 people. You're right.
It's I love the concept though, and potentially, so I guess someone listening might think, well, gosh, that's a heck of a lot of work, and I'm overloaded with other projects. Have you thought of doing like an affiliate program where other recruiters can send people to your academy?
I have not thought about that. Someone actually, that's a great suggestion. And someone had recommended to me doing the course, selling or promoting the course to internal recruiters as to how to hire. Because part of the course, there are approximately 20 downloadable templates. And there are a lot of the templates that I use. So they're sample pitches. Because what I find people struggle with is, how do I actually send a pitch to someone? What should I say in that? Especially on LinkedIn when you only have 300 characters. Partnerships and affiliates are the next stage of that. There's, Mark, you know, as a, I'm a creative person, but I'm not a marketer. I am a salesperson. And I will say that there's always different ideas that are bouncing around in my head. And it's trying to hone that in and say, what's going to be the best use of my time with the most impact
Yes.
But I will say to you that this academy, it probably took 3 months of my life to do it. But I will say it only cost around $2,000-$3,000.
Yeah, it's more the time. It's the time, right, that most people are not. But that's a good thing for you, because most people are not going to be put themselves through that to create it. So it gives you market advantage in that sense. So you mentioned templates, and I wrote that down. I wanted to circle back on a couple of levels. One is, I love how systematized you've made your business, which is rare for a business of your size. And I'd also love to talk about outreach and business development. But so first of all, on the systems, how did you know to do that? Or what inspired you to say, do you know what? I want all of our processes to have a template or a checklist so that, you know, we have standard operating procedures.
It was when I started working for that totally commission-based recruitment agency, and no disrespect to the person that I was working for who had started it, but he had come from a large firm and he already knew how to do things. And he started this as his second career. And his thought was, well, you're a salesperson, you'll know how to do it. And I was literally on LinkedIn watching Barbara Bruno courses all day long and learning from Barbara Bruno about how to recruit. And that's where I thought, okay, I need a series of pitches to HR managers and HR people. I need ideal persona pitches to, you know, sales leaders. I need ideal persona pitches to candidates. And then I started to find that there's the same intake questions I was asking about a role. So I need to create that. I also started to find that there was a recap after a call. A lot of times what I was finding with recruiters, Mark, would be you get on a phone call with a new client and you get the lowdown on the role and the company and the culture. And then you go off and you do your thing and you find that you start presenting candidates and it's like, oh, wait a minute. No, we were disconnected on that. So there is a very simple recap message after a call that I always send out, that before I will start recruiting, I say, I want to make sure we are aligned and I have your understanding. You said these things were important. So all of those became so critical to me because as an entrepreneur, they helped to refine the time that I was spending on having to recreate the wheel. And I still have those templates. They're kept in my Google Workspace and they're actually kept on Excel sheets. And I copy and paste all the time with what those look like. It was also very important to me to refine a tech stack. I knew I was going to be using Zoom. I knew I needed to have Microsoft Teams because there's a lot of companies that were Microsoft based. I knew I needed to have an AI tool. There's another one that I use called Aspect, A-S-P-E-C-T. They are an HR tool that will help you with your Boolean searches on LinkedIn, but they will also help to create job descriptions and they will take the content of your video call that you have with a client and do a recap message of it. So all of a sudden, Mark, it went from me sitting down and doing candidate profiles and recaps to me having these conversations online, funneling it through an AI tool, letting the AI tool spit it out, and then me going back to refine it. And I really do use technology quite a bit for that.
I love that. That's brilliant. And look, you started creating these templates before really ChatGPT took off. Now, there's really no excuse not to have, you know, systems and processes for every part of your recruiting and business development process, because with AI, you can do it a lot faster. And as you say, if you inject your own transcripts and personas into the process, it makes it much more relevant for you. Have you looked at Quill? They're a fellow Canadian AI company for recruitment agencies.
I just heard about it. I haven't used it yet. Good tool.
Yeah, a lot of our clients love it. And I actually met the founder here in London a couple of months ago. He was exhibiting at a recruitment agency expo. So yeah, definitely worth a conversation with them. By the way, quick shout out to Barb Bruno, one of the all-time greats. I got a LinkedIn message from Barb a couple of weeks ago because I'm speaking at NAPS in Las Vegas soon. And she is as well. And so we're going to try and meet up. I've never met her in person. So
You feel like you know her from all of the
right?
content that she puts
yeah,
out. Yeah,
absolutely. So I love this way of thinking, how you're very organized for a salesperson. sometimes, like the way you're describing your workflow and how you think is atypical potentially for salespeople. So, but I think it's powerful. Earlier, you said humor in outreach. Can we talk about that?
Everyone.
The biggest question I'm getting asked right now is around business development, because of course we know that we should be doing business development all the time, regardless of it. And it, like, the best time to do it is when you're busy, right? Because then you're confident. And when you don't need the work, then that's when it's more likely to show up. And when you're desperate, then that's not a great frame of mind to bring to your calls. But human nature being what it is, when times are great and they're super busy, then they take their foot off the gas. And we're not in every sector, but in a lot of sectors right now, there's definitely a decrease in job vacancies. What is your approach to BD, and what's worked best for you?
I've listened to a lot of your previous guests that have been on talking about BD, from, you know, having a certain number of call metrics that they have to hit. And I know you've talked extensively about cold calling and the value of cold calling. I also agree there's an inherent value in cold calling. For me, a lot of my business development has been referral based. And I got caught twice and burned twice, Mark, in the last 5 years with having a client who started to funnel me a lot of business. And I started to go, wow, this is really good. And, you know, I'm getting a few $100,000 of billings out of this client. And then inevitably, the well runs dry. They have enough people. And you're going, wait a minute, what happened to this? So that needed to happen to me twice before I said, okay, I can't make this mistake again.
I can relate, definitely.
And what I am constantly doing is asking my clients for referrals. Is there any other HR leader in your network that I could speak to? Is there any other sales leader in your network that you would refer me to? That's number one. Number two is I spend a lot of my time with different affiliations. So chambers of commerce are a wonderful, local chambers of commerce are a wonderful resource for business. Candidates are an amazing resource for business. A lot of times when a candidate will message me back and say, hey, Jordana, nice to meet you. Thanks for the reach out. Not interested in moving. Happy to stay put. I will reply to them and say, understood, John, now might not be the right time. Do you know anyone else who might be, you know, in the market for this role? Or is your company hiring? And they might say, actually, my company is hiring, or I do know someone who's hiring. So using that warm network has been invaluable to me. But I've automated my outreach. And I know there's a lot of opinions on this, because everybody knows when you, especially, you know, as a recruiter, when I get that automated outreach, Mark, I don't know about you, but I can't stand the question that I get where it's, I know I don't know you, and I know you're selling something. And it's like, hey, Jordana, what's your biggest problem this year? Or, hey, Jordana, you know, what tool are you using for this? And I'm like, I know where this is going. Like, I know the psychology. I'm in sales. I get the path that you're going down. So for me, I like to get to the point. One of the things that my clients and my candidates appreciate about me, and they'll say it, is my bluntness, my directness. So when I do my outreach messages, Mark, I am a cold outreach, blunt type of person. And it really will be, I saw you had an account executive role listed. I saw it was listed for 2 weeks, because I know there are ways to go on LinkedIn and see how long something's been listed for, right? There's also tips in following the market. If I saw that a company just got acquired, or a company just got funding, or, you know, a company recently hired a sales leader, when you hire a sales leader, when I was hired as a sales leader, what am I doing? I'm assessing my team, and then I'm going to make some changes. So those are the connections that I would start to build.
Awesome. So what you're talking about are triggers, potentially, which are a sign that certain companies are worth reaching out to. So, for example, sales leaders recently been appointed in that company. That would be a logical, you know, person to reach out to, or companies who are advertising for roles. So those are both great examples of triggers. And you said that you're direct with your messaging. But, and by the way, you and I are both, we advocate automation as well. I think the challenge is a lot of people do it badly. And then, so people who receive automation that's clunky, or, you know, seems inauthentic or, you know, are really turned off it, and they assume, oh, I would never use automation, but they're missing out on a huge amount of time saving and being able to reach more people more efficiently, but it absolutely has to be done in the right way. What,
you know, the good old, we've helped people like you in your industry. What, like, what in me? In what industry? Did you look anything up about me?
Yeah, that's a bit too general. So what have you found works best for you in your blunt style?
I'll give you an example. 2 weeks ago, I reached out to a company that I did not know if they were hiring or not. And they were a company that I felt would fit with our values. You know, really the Hire Equity name, everybody always asks me, where did that name come from? And where the name came from was, you have candidates, you have recruitment, and you have companies. And you need this mix of all three. You don't need agencies, but you do need internal recruiters at some point to hire and to hire successfully. And it used to be in the past that, you know, the company was up here, the candidate was down here, and the recruiter was even lower. I'm off the screen now with where we were. And my premise was, in order for this mix to be successful and for the candidate to be successful and the company to earn revenue, we need to be on an equitable playing field here. No one is more important than the other. Because, Mark, I take this role very seriously. I know it might not be life and death if someone gets the role, but it's someone's mental health. If they get into the wrong role and it's the wrong fit and I coerce them into doing that, that, you know, shame on me. But I will say, to this company, I was very blunt. And I said, I specialize in sales talent. I was a former VP of sales for 20 years. I want to hire your salespeople because I respect your brand because of these three reasons. May I introduce myself and help you hire your sales team? And they wrote back to me and said, we are actually looking at hiring two account executives in the next month. We'll book a meeting with you. You can do a presentation. So I'll do maybe around 10 to 15 of those customized pitches a week. They're companies and brands that I really like. And I will tell you, Mark, for me, I found a lot more success in the medium to large enterprise market doing that than I have in the small business. So the employees that are scaling like 20 to 50, not as much success there.
Hmm. That's interesting. Why do you think that is?
I think a lot of the medium and enterprise customers that we work with, they're familiar with how the recruitment agency model works. They've used us in the past. They know that we can complement what it is that they're doing and not compete. Whereas I think a lot of the smaller companies, they see us as just a huge cost that maybe isn't necessary. And they've had some negative experiences and say, we're going to try and go this alone.
Hmm. Okay, that's interesting. So you're targeting medium to large. Now, what in your world is medium to large?
I will go by employee count. So we'll go from about 250 to 500 employees, and then we'll go 500 to 1,000 plus. And when I look at my portfolio, I will tell you, Mark, that maybe 20% of the business I do is with tech companies and 80% are in non-tech related fields. So I am definitely not that, you know, SaaS-based tech recruiter that you are calling on, even though I've had experience working in that field. It's not a field that I've just been able to have a lot of success with outreach.
Okay, interesting. So we're targeting companies with 500 to 1,000?
250 to 500, yeah, plus.
Okay, got it. And you mentioned 10 to 15 of these custom pitches a week. How does the automation fit in then?
Absolutely. The automation also happens through Taplio. And so it's a sequence of messages. It's a 5-message sequence that will happen. And I can set the number of days based on how the individual responds. And those automated messages are to people in the way that I do it are people in specific industries. So I'll pick maybe industrial or manufacturing or health tech or fintech or something like that. And then I'll tailor a script and then send those out. And then I'll just keep cycling through. And a lot of times I'll do that based on what I'm seeing in the market. I watch a lot of what's happening in the market. Or I'll find a segment, a geographic segment. A lot of the business that I do, Mark, is in Canada and the US. We've tried to do overseas and it just hasn't been as successful. And so I'll pick a geographic segment. And I've heard some of your previous podcast interviewees talk about how it's so important to have that local number to be able to draw upon. So when you're calling somewhere, I will tell you, I've had so much success in the Ontario market because there still is a rapport factor, especially when you're dealing with the industrial manufacturing sector and they call up and they're like, oh, you're in Toronto. Do you go to this restaurant? Do you hang out at that place? I grew up in that area. And there's this camaraderie.
For sure. Yeah, yeah. That's that makes things easier. Okay, awesome. So I like it's a combination of you do have automated sequences and you have some customized messages to targeting specific companies as well. And then the referral, I wanted to ask you about the referrals because I think it's underutilized, even though on the surface, it's obvious, but people, A, don't do it consistently, and B, maybe don't do it effectively. So when you're asking for referrals, what's the time? Can you give me more context and color around that? What's the timing of your request? And then how do you make that request in a way that you've got the best chance of it being accepted?
The timing of my request is two different points of time. So depending on the client, number one would be after I've presented candidates and those candidates are in the interview flow and I'm getting positive feedback. So there's some positive reinforcement that Jordana and her team are doing a good job. We like the quality of her work. I would never ask for that referral before that stage because I haven't proven myself yet. The other point in time is post-contract, post-agreement being signed by the candidate. And that person has been onboarded within their first 30 days. I'll reach out. Obviously, I'm keeping in touch with the candidate. And then I'll go back to the sales VP, the sales director, the CHRO, the CEO, and say, pleasure working with you. I look forward to the next role. Also, if anyone in your network could benefit from my services, I would love to meet with them. And sometimes, Mark, I will offer a referral fee. I'll offer a 10 to 15% referral fee. A lot of times people will not take me up on that, especially in the C-level. They'll say, no, thank you. We just want to recommend you for the quality of your work. The other thing is asking for referrals from like-minded industries. Sales trainers, they don't do recruitment. They are training talent and going into a company. And inevitably, when they do that, there's some people who just aren't rising to the top in that training. And that sales VP is going to say, we're going to need to make some changes here. So that trainer will refer me.
That is a brilliant idea as well. So referral partnerships with synergistic companies. So companies that don't compete with you, but they serve the same clients potentially. So,
and you know, yeah. Who gave me that idea? Another recruiter. This is why it's so important we talk to each other. Victor, who owns Sell Me This Pen out in Quebec, he's literally Jordana in Quebec. And we share these ideas. There's no need to compete by withholding information in my world.
Agree 100%. And that's like, yeah, well, that's the ethos behind this podcast, as well as our coaching program, which is a community of like-minded recruiting firm owners, is, you know, you can learn so much from each other and support each other way more than the risk of, oh, that person might steal my client or whatever, which we've never really seen that happening. I love that your style is, you're saying you're blunt, but you don't seem that blunt to me. Like, you seem very personable, but like, maybe it's because you're humorous as well. So how else do you use that style of blunt honesty in order to build relationships with clients and candidates?
The candidate outreach message. My message, so on LinkedIn, I have an average of between 55 and 70 acceptance rate.
Wow, that's high.
It is. And all, you know how LinkedIn works with, you know, credits, credit back once they, you know, accept or decline. I'm always in a surplus situation, which is a good news story for me. But I will tell you, the headline that has always brought me, you know, the most amount of attraction back and acceptance back to a candidate, that headline is, I know recruiter DMs can be annoying, but ... And then I'll go into my message. And my message is always characterized by three distinct pieces of information. Number one is, I tell you the company name. I do. I've got a contract with this company. I'm not worried about you going and applying to that job online because my agreement will protect me for that. I want you to do your research. It always drove me nuts as a candidate when someone would say, I have a job with a company and this company is paying top dollar. Do you want to talk to us? Like, I don't know the company. I don't know the money. I don't know anything. So I tell you the money. I tell you the company and I tell you the role. And I always end it by saying, is this worth your time to discuss? And a lot of times the response that I'll get back is, recruiters aren't annoying. Thank you very much for this. Please send me the job description. Let's jump on a call. Or no, Jordana, I'm not interested. I've got a great job right now.
Love that. Fantastic. Yeah. And so you're really breaking down barriers by just being so transparent with the information. And then that engenders a much more positive response. So totally see why.
The same with clients, Mark, that it'll be the same message in terms of the percentage. I don't hide that. It's listed on my website. So it's very, I just find that especially as the buyer becomes younger and the C-level becomes younger, they don't want to waste their time with these big meetings and this big pomp and circumstance and presentation. Just give me the information.
So how does it apply in a client context then?
In a client context, the message would be similar. And I would send my presentation deck or a copy of the roles filled with reference clients that you can reach out to and reference roles that we've recently filled. So I'm constantly updating that. And it will say my outline my fees for senior hires, for mid-level hires, and for junior hires, because there's a tier system that I work with for that. So 22% for senior hires, 20% for mid-level, and I'll do 18% for junior. And you might argue that that is too low. But what I have found in my business is it allows for affordability. If that internal HR director thinks about using me, but then says, I won't because she's too expensive, that decision-making process of that 18% a lot of times will win me that business. It just happened 2 days ago with one of my clients.
Jordana, I would say I want you to get your rates up still because, and especially here's the thing, you're placing salespeople, right? So what? How much revenue and profit is your candidate going to be bringing to that client that is easily going to, you know, more than pay for that extra 2% or 3% or whatever?
Millions, you're right.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I'm fascinated by this pitch deck. When are you sending your pitch deck with examples of roles you filled and all that other stuff?
First email. Always
on really?
The first email.
Okay. Yep.
I want you to see the names of the clients I've worked with, and I want you to see the business or the titles of the roles that we've done so that you can see yourself in there and you can say, you've worked in that industry before. You've hired a VP before. You've hired an SDR before. It's the first email.
Got it. So is that in those custom emails that you mentioned, the 10 to 15, and you're attaching your pitch deck in those?
You got it. Yeah. And it's short. It's just a two-pager. It's a PDF two-pager front and back. So it's not
got
this 10-page long deck. And I will state my rates in there as well.
Okay. Wow. Fantastic. It's so interesting. What I've learned, Jordana, is that there's not one right way of doing this business, right? And you've found some absolute fantastic practices and strategies that, you know, have allowed you to build 500K, which is, you know, fantastic by any standard. And I'm loving this. So what's the future then for Hire Equity?
Probably contacting Mark to see how we can get my rates up.
Yes.
And check. get more billings in. The future for Hire Equity is going to be one of wanting to bring on a few full-time employees. So I've listened to so many of your podcasts and heard people who have scaled from a million to multi-million dollar agencies. I love being in the business. I love being, you know, on the ground, speaking with clients. I still love doing the sourcing. I'm not ready to remove myself from it yet. But there are certainly ways that I can progress, not only just with revenue, but, you know, with trying to diversify our client set, trying to get more of those CRO, C-level roles as well. And so really refining and being able to do that. And to do that, I will need to bring on someone full-time who can help me with the recruiting side of the business.
Fantastic. That's exciting. Keep in mind, they don't necessarily even have to be in Canada. In my team, there's two of us, there's Sanjay, who you met, who are in the UK. And then we have team members in South Africa, Ghana, and then three in the Philippines. And they're all absolutely fantastic, committed to our mission. Our clients love them. And so I think never before in the history of the world have we had access to this global talent pool, which allows you as a small business to scale, you know, it so much more easily than maybe in the past. So I'd love to continue the conversation with you on that, Jordana, but congratulations on what you've achieved in a short space of time, and long may that continue.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks so much. And by the way, really appreciate how many golden nuggets you gave us and how specific you were with like tools and tech stack and everything, and messaging is super valuable. I really appreciate you.
Of course. Thank you.
All right. Have an awesome day. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Resilient Recruiter. I know how busy recruiters are, so I'm honored that you're investing this time with me each week. I don't take your attention for granted. That's why I'm going all out to deliver value for you here, real insights you can apply to improve your business. And if you really want to help me to reach a wider audience and impact more people, please consider leaving the show a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you leave me a review, please reach out and let me know so I can thank you personally. Please hit the subscribe button, and I'll see you next time.